Welcome to Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Discussions on gear, technique, industry news, and interviews with the best in the business. Now, here are your hosts, Rich Baum and Brian Berkowitz.
Welcome to Shooting Spaces Podcast. This is Rich Baum from Sacramento, California.
And Brian Berkowitz out of New York. And we have a special guest joining us today, straight out of San Diego, California, owner and lead photographer of Aloha Photo Video. Let's welcome Sam Chen. Sam, why don't you say hello to everyone and tell our listeners where they can find you online.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is Sam Chen. I'm the founder, owner, chief photographer at Aloha Photo Video, based in San Diego, California. The website is aloha-photovideo.com and Instagram is aloha.photovideo. Just stop by, check out what I've been up to, and feel free to ask questions and hit me up.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for coming, Sam. I feel I've known you for a long time, though we've just met once. You're just such a great contributor to the society, and from the PFRE days to the Facebook groups and everything, and you're like always there. So people love to hear from Sam Chen.
It's my pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that I'm so, if I was going to say I admire one thing from you, I just think it's you just do all these really cool things, and the results are great. You're like in some ways living the dream, because a lot of us would love to be shooting places like we see you shoot. And I'm sure you shoot some, I'll ask you later about other kinds of palatial palaces. But, you know, you always seem to do something cool. And I thought, you know, like the kind of maybe something people don't know about you, or, you know, talk about your drones and your business or your background, your history, and just anything you wanted to talk about.
Sure. Where do we start?
Yeah, where did you start? Or where, you know, I don't want to go back to your teething years and breastfeeding, but I certainly would think let's go just from college or high school and just how you got into photography and how'd you get into this shooting buildings.
Right. I was born with a silver camera on a silver platter and silver camera in my mouth.
Mine was gold. So
photography, you know, for a lot of us, all started with probably our dads. You know, my dad was really into photography. He had a Minolta, one of those mechanical cameras from the 60s or whatever. And I've always been fascinated by cameras. He would go to, you know, Polynesia, Indonesia, Thailand, come back with the most amazing slides. You know, they're probably Kodachrome or something like that. And they're absolutely faded by now. But I used to just religiously look at his pictures and dream about, you know, the world. And then I was fascinated by gadgets and art, so the two kind of combine. But you know, I never really was spoiled with a nice camera until I got to college, and that's when I really treated myself to a real camera. It was probably a Minolta Maxim 5000. Remember those days? And you know, autofocus just came out. It was a big deal. And so I shot for my college, UCLA. I was on the newspaper staff, and
I shot for the
yearbook. And I just thought, you know what, I'll just do this as a side job to make some money. It's going to be a piece of cake, you know, no problem. Of course, dating myself, the Persian Gulf War broke out. And we have protests all over the campus. There's like hunger strikes and violence, you know. So I thought it was going to be a cakewalk. And it turned out to be a total full-time 24/7 job. And I loved it. I love every second of it. I was shooting six rolls of T-Max 3200 and 100 and getting to check out development in the dark room. And it was basically shoot for free. My most was probably six rolls of 36 in one day. And we roll our own films. You know, there's these bulk film loaders and we would actually just roll it. And it was so satisfying to be able to be part of that. And I felt the rush. When I graduated from college, I wanted to join National Geographic and shoot, you know, those beautiful pictures I grew up looking in the magazines and, you know, just live the dream. But then I got one of those desk jobs in Silicon Valley doing high tech for 10 years. So that's where I kind of fell in love with filmmaking and animation. So
what were you doing and what kind of a technical and Silicon Valley?
Yeah. My background is actually computer science engineering. So it's really helpful to have that science background. And so you're not afraid of cameras and gear. You know, that's why I'm always MacGyvering and DIYing a bunch of accessories together because I'm a tinker.
I would never do anything like that.
It's kind of like instead of cars, for me, it's like camera gear and drones. I was doing a lot of DIY drones. My drone was always open and stuff hanging out. You know, this is way before the Mavic and Inspire. So it was filmmaking that really got me, you know, back into the arts. And the reason why I like filmmaking is it combined two of my passions in life, which are number one, music, number two, photography. And filmmaking kind of takes music and you can put beautiful pictures on top and you have motion picture. So long story short, for probably 12, 13 years, I made movies and I did the film festival circuit. And I have some films out there. You could buy my film on iTunes and Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. So having said that, all of that was really training my eye. Eye for composition, eye for colors, and you know, leading the eye from one part of the screen to another. So pretty much everything I'm doing in real estate photography now is on top of the foundations of years and years of kind of training that muscle and that sensibility of controlling where the eye sees and how to do that using colors and contrast and brightness and, you know, kind of, you know, rule of thirds or knowing when to break rule of thirds and, you know, things like that.
Yeah. I'm a musician myself and I've worked on a film. So it's a small world. Where did you grow up? What part of Southern California, right?
Yeah, San Diego. I'm back to my hometown.
Oh, you were there? Boy, lucky guy, man.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, beautiful. You know, I taught college classes for 6 years in animation and filmmaking and cinematography. And one thing I tell my students is, you know, don't underestimate the traditional arts. A lot of people just want to, you know, learn animation and go right to Pixar. But a lot of it comes down to life drawing. A lot of it comes down to basic, you know, design and composition from just using a pencil and paper. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people who want to jump into photography, they should totally study, you know, learn how to draw, learn how to paint, you know, listen to music. If they're making videos, you know, for real estate, music is a big part of it, knowing how to edit to music, pacing and rhythm.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that, Sam, because I'm a graduate of School of Visual Arts in Manhattan, and I took a lot of photography classes too, and they required us to take drawing classes and all that type of stuff. And at the time, I was thinking to myself, what am I wasting my time for? But even the subtleties of learning highlights and shadows and stuff like that really go a long way when you're learning your craft of photography and learning to excel at it.
Yeah, SVA, that's a great school. A lot of awesome animation. I curated a animation program for the San Diego Asian Film Festival for 15 years, and we got a lot of great student films out of SVA. So, you know, it's very encouraging to see young people, you know, get that foundation.
Hey, Sam, I, you know, me kind of like you being a gear guy. Brian, you a real gear guy or DIY stuff like that?
I'm not so much a gear guy in reference to DIY, but I am a gearhead in the sense I love tech and I buy a lot of gadgets and my wife always gives me that look, but you know, I don't know what you want to call it. I don't have it in me to go and start pulling my drone apart and putting it back together because I also fly drones, Sam. But I won't build my own. I'm not that advanced or anything like that. But, you know, I do like tech and I do like gadgets. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. So what equipment I wanted to kind of go just down really, really don't go too into it, but just sort of touch bases on the brands or the models if you want to go into it. But just kind of give people an idea of what are you shooting with these days?
Okay. I started with a Canon. I've always wanted to graduate, ironically, from Sony to Canon. I bought the first Sony DSLR when they bought Minolta and Konica, I believe. It was the Alpha 1 or A1, and I still have it today. So when I had a chance to sort of buy a real camera, I got the Canon 7D crop sensor, and I shot with a 10 to 22 millimeter crop lens. And it was fine. It did great until I dropped it and shattered. And the 7D still works, but the lens was toast. So it was a chance to go to full frame. I started shooting with a 6D, and I loved it. Everything was great about it. Its focusing was horrible for sports, but I'm usually manually focusing anyway. And then recently, I upgraded to the 5D Mark IV just to get a little bit more dynamic range, low noise, and also dual card. For me, dual card is very important, because I shoot a lot of stuff that's kind of hard to repeat, you know. And then in terms of the rest of the system, I always shoot with Cam Ranger. I can't even shoot with interiors without them anymore. I just hate touching the camera. I can barely use the menu system of my camera, but everything's through the Cam Ranger. Tripod, I've kind of gone from the cheap stuff. Now I've settled on the Benro 410. Not 410. I forget the number.
Sweet looking. I saw your write up on it in Spurl's. Sweet looking tripod. If I was in the market, that'd be something I'd look at.
Yeah, it's an F-stopper's recommendation. So I just went with it. Carbon fiber. It's very bulky and hefty in a good way and very light. And so I really dig it. It's about it's $410, meaning $410, mm-hmm. not the model number. So really good value. And then, of course, I went from the 410 Gearhead Manfrotto to 405 and now the D4. And I've settled on D4. And, you know, how do you like your D4, Rich? I meant to ask.
Oh, you know, it's a little, I'll be honest, it's a little getting used to. Mm-hmm. I still don't feel comfortable with the manually doing the pan. It's only got a... Mm-hmm. Two access gears, mm-hmm. and it's hard to get kind of, it's not a big deal, but it's just hard to get used to it. And the other one mm-hmm. is the hands are different. They're opposite of my 405, completely opposite. Yeah. And that's, I'll tell you something, that's really playing with me, because I always used to have my right hand would do one or the other, but now it's left and middle. So anyway, that sounds great. And I just wanted to know one thing. Because I'm thinking about doing a video on tilt shifts and trying to put together. Everybody's talking about tilt shifts these days. I mean, I'm sure I'm partially guilty of it. But, and you know, there's a lot of misnomers, a lot of, you know, people feeling they've got to get it or, you know, blah, blah, blah. We all know that. But I was just thinking, what would you say in 30 words or less? No, in just a minute, Sam, to people, real quickly, just a canned explanation of why you would use a tilt shift lens and who is it for, something like that.
All right. So I shoot with the 17 millimeter and the 24 millimeter Canon tilt shift. And I, like 99% of all my interiors and more exteriors are shot with it, all tilt shift. I love them. I can't live without them. Having said that, I recently had to ship it to the Canon USA to get it tuned because it was starting to get soft on the edges. So the last week I shot with a 17 to 40 millimeter zoom lens. And guess what? It was a miserable experience on the spot because I'm doing fake tilt shift by tilting the camera down and shooting the widest possible and then hoping that everything comes together in post. But having said that, I was shocked at how good everything looked. Once you correct the perspective, it was really sharp. If you know how to tweak the right levers in Lightroom, it actually can fool the eye. It's not that much less sharp than a 17 millimeter 24 without, you know, Lightroom adjustment. So I think you could fake it pretty well. But so it's more about the experience on location. I like to know exactly what's in the frame and what's not, and not leaving the guesswork until after post. Yeah. So there's pros and cons. If you can afford it, for sure, go for it. If you can't afford it, no, it's not a must. You can fake it until you make it.
And the other question's definitely going to be 17 or 24, right. Or Nikon. We'll talk 19 to 24.
Okay, so I think a lot of people, you know, preach 24, 24. I'm a big 17 fan, and here's why. You can always crop until it looks like a 24. And the beauty of that is that cameras today have so much resolution and pixels. When I upgraded to the 5D Mark IV, it gave me a lot more pixels to work with. So now I crop it usually to about 20 millimeters. But sometimes I leave it at 17 if I want the ceiling. If I'm outside, I want a little bit more height. I can get that. So I dare you to see the difference. You know, once I crop it and then you compare it to a native 24, I rather have that flexibility to, you know, because I do a lot of post anyway. If you don't want to touch post, if you don't want to crop, then maybe 24, you know, is your answer. But I love 17 and how much flexibility you have.
It's funny you say that, Sam, because I recently, about 2 or 3 months ago, got the 24 tilt shift, which is the first tilt shift lens I bought. And I was kind of torn in going back and forth between going with the 24 versus the 17. And I was actually heavily considering getting a 17 along with the, I'm a Canon also, with a Canon 1.5 times extender, which will kind of then make your 17 just around a 24, give or take a little, a couple of millimeters. It turns out that I ended up getting the 24 millimeter, but there's a little part of me that regrets not getting the 17 with the extender as well, because then I have the option of both, like you said, shooting wider and cropping if I need to, and then just throwing an extender on it if I want a 24 millimeter or right around there.
But Sam, I just want to jump in and say, I will see your bet and say that. In general, because I'm shooting with the 19 millimeters, which I haven't shot the 17 Canon, but the 19, here's the deal for me. I love it because I can use it for a whole house and I don't have to switch, because the 24, I was always having to put something wider on for the little bedrooms, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, me too.
I love the 19 and I shoot the whole house with it, but to tell you, if I'm trying to do it, I'm lately been doing more detail shots of, let's say, a nice sink going along with a nice stove. Trying to get that shot close up, you got to move in so close to get it. It just doesn't work for me. So I need the 24 also.
Well, you know, here's the deal. So you got to play a mind trick on yourself, a Jedi mind trick. Pretend you have a 24, even though you don't.
Right.
So you
right.
stand where you would stand with a 24. But you're shooting with a 17. Now your subject is tiny. Well, maybe not tiny, but medium. And so, but knowing that you can crop in post, knowing you have the extra pixel, knowing that with Lightroom and Photoshop, you have just amazing ability to fool the eye. And for most of us who are just submitting to MLS, it really doesn't matter. If you're shooting, you know, if you're like Hargis or Mike Kelly or Scott Francis, then that's different. Your pictures are going to be blown up really big for ad campaigns. But for MLS, you can get away with murder. So you would just stand where you would stand for with a 24 or 19, shoot it as is, and it looks like crap. And then you crop it in post, done.
And Brian, do you shoot all the time with your tilt shift?
Since I got it, I've started to. Like I said, I have the 24, so there's a lot of situations where 24, as we just spoke about, is not wide enough, you know, a small bathroom or something like that. So I do have a 16-35 Canon, the 2.8 lens, which I'll use if I need to get a little wider. I'll use that on small bathrooms. But the first 2 months I got it, I was guilty of using that more than I should just because I got it and it was a new toy. Until I kind of got over that and I was like, all right, now I really need to use the right lens for the right room. You know, I was shooting really tight bathrooms with the 24 just because I was like, I got this tilt shift, I have to use it, you know? So once I got over that and kind of went back to the, I guess, artistic side of my head that said, okay, I need to use the right tool for the job and not just the new toy I bought. Now I kind of go back and forth between the 16-35 and the 24. Until I get the 17.
And what's on the horizon for you, Sam? What's you got coming up?
Gosh, more of the same. I mean, so maybe a good topic to talk about is real estate versus, you know, commercial architecture. A lot of people aspire to do all those things. But something people don't talk about is sort of the gray area in between. There is such a gray area and there's a huge market in the middle which is really luxury real estate. And I know not every small town has that, but if you live along the coast, that's a huge piece of pie, but, you know, waiting to be taken. And if you are starting up, you know, target that. I mean, that's what I did. I started with the $70 per shoot, doing very humble, you know, $300,000 homes. And that's like a dump in San Diego, $300,000. That's like a crack den, you know, opium den here in San Diego. I've also cut my teeth by doing a lot of surf shacks. You know, San Diego's a surfer town. We have a lot of like homes that are, you know, just kind of just basically a place where surfers go to sleep and eat. That's it. And the dumpy, but they train you to learn how to sort of incorporate the lifestyle into every shoot. For my market of San Diego, it's not just about selling the home, it's selling the lifestyle. So sometimes the home is a dump, and instead you are focusing on the view from the living room, view from the patio, the deck, the roof, from the, you know, jacuzzi or whatever. So you're trying to always incorporate the sunset, picking the right time of day, always trying to get that view in there, getting the palm trees, kind of working in that palm tree to get that silhouette and framing and things like that. So, you know, I think that's where I started. But then I always knew that I wanted to target luxury real estate in San Diego. To me, that's a sweet spot because San Diego is full of luxury realties. Like Pacific Sotheby's huge here, Berkshire Hathaway, Coldwell, Willis Allen, and Keller Williams. So these are some of the sort of targets that you can go after. And the pie is big enough for everybody. If you're good enough and you have good word of mouth, it's yours for the taking. So the beauty of doing luxury real estate is once you get a couple of clients, and then it's like nonstop. You don't have to spend so much time on promoting yourself, on bidding, getting underbid, negotiating. I mean, that's just the worst part of commercial photography. We have tons of commercial photography. I live in an area full of hotels. You know, during Comic-Con, all my neighbors are hotels that get booked, and there's just so much opportunities for commercial here. But I almost feel like that's a pain in the butt. You know, PITA, pain in the ass. I rather go for Sotheby's or Berkshire Hathaway, whatever. Where once you kind of lock in and become their preferred, you know, photographer, part of their preferred vendor list, then you don't have to do any marketing anymore. They just come to you, and the money may not be as good as commercial or hospitality, but at the same time, they're good. They're way better than regular non-luxury. And you only have to shoot like one house a day, and you can make a good living, and you never have to go and, you know, go through the pain of bidding and looking for more, you know, architects to shoot for.
So Sam, I wanted to ask you, because I'm also a drone operator, I have my Part 107, but you were telling me earlier that you got into real estate photography from drones, and that kind of segued into, I guess you can call it, land or ground shots. I kind of had the opposite happen to me. You know, I started doing ground shots and took, you know, my license and went into drone from there. So you want to tell us a little bit about your story with your aerials and your drone and how that led into the photography you do now?
Yeah, like before I was shooting real estate, I was shooting artsy fartsy films for myself and for Vimeo and for the tourism board of San Diego and the city. So I was always around town shooting time lapse and just, you know, cool, like fake miniaturization, you know, just cool stuff. But then I was always frustrated with not being able to access higher vantage points to shoot, you know, down, because that's when you shoot fake miniaturization, you kind of have to look down like God looking at ants. So I was like, God, how do I get up higher? And I was running out of skyscrapers to shoot from. And so it wasn't until this video that I saw on YouTube, where it was a friend of mine who shot surfers in Santa Cruz surfing, and it was all from the air, and it was right above the lineup, and he's just shooting these surfers, you know, getting tubed. And the big difference was the camera was absolutely stable. And that's when the brushless gimbal came out. And even though it's only two axis stabilization, it was still amazing. And I immediately knew that that was something special, something I had to learn and master. So I went out and bought Phantom 1, with GoPro 3 and, you know, in a gimbal, and everything was very DIY. You had to kind of hook it up yourself. There's a lot of soldering, and I was hooked. I mean, I was able to bring the camera up to vantage points that I couldn't before, and I was completely hooked and won over. So one day I was shooting some friends training for a triathlon, and the guy was like, man, this is so incredible. This is the future. And I'm like, yeah, isn't this great? He's like, have you ever thought of using this for real estate? I'm like, yeah, totally. Cause, my dad was a broker for Century 21. So I'm very familiar with that. And I have a huge love for architecture. And I'm like, do you know any, realtor? And he's like, yeah, me. And I was like, really? So he gave me my first shot, and, I shot his, listing in La Jolla, California. And long story short, we shot a video, including lifestyle of surfer girls surfing, and my drone was like following them and panning, you know, dolly and cranes and all these like cinema moves. And long story short, this investor in China saw the video, sight unseen, just the video, and bought the home for $2 million. And this is like 4 or 5 years ago. And it was like, wow, I think we're onto something here. So from then on, I started to do more and more drone videos and photos. And then I would often get asked, hey, do you do interior? And I'm like, of course I do. You know, that's actually my first love is interior photography. So it was the drone and aerial photography that kind of got me into inside the home of a lot of these listings.
Cool. It's pretty interesting how that segued for you. As far as marketing or advice for people starting out, because we're going to wrap this up in a couple of minutes, what kind of advice would you give people that are starting out that are looking to get to where you are, whether it's a year from now or 2 years from now? What are some hard lessons you learned, you know, the hard way? And maybe you can give a little insight to that, so maybe people don't have to go to this through the struggles that you did and can get a quick leg up.
Yeah, you know, I think the number one thing is education. I remember when I started out, I was totally living on YouTube, and just, you know, this is way before Rich Bomb and Nathan Cool and all the other stuff that's out there for free now. I was watching Scott Hargis when that got a little bit too basic. I went to Mike Kelly. So education is very important. There's now stuff on lynda.com and Creative Live. So I would totally beef up on that. In terms of gear, you really can get really, really far without all this fancy tilt shift, carbon fiber, all the stuff. I mean, just speed light, a simple Rebel camera, and a little...
But you need a Thor's hammer.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yang Newell, that's all you need. It was fine for many years. It's not all of a sudden not okay now in the age of Godox and 8200 and 360 and 600 and carbon fiber. You can do a lot with very little. It's all about education. Two more things I would say is it's important to know enough post, because when you're on location, a lot of times you can do a lot of stuff, you know, like reflections and things that are just not, would take too long to fix on location. A commercial shoot, sure, you can have your assistant do all this stuff for you. But for these type of run and gun, you got to have that confidence you can fix in post. And there's something that I think that's really on the cusp of our tools and usage and availability is outsourcing. So even today, you don't have to be a Photoshop expert. You can outsource a lot of stuff. They'll fix a lot of things for you. When I was starting out, there was not much outsourcing. But now, it's very competitive, and we might as well take advantage of it. I'm starting to outsource more and more, and I think they come back about 75%, and I would do the last 25% to give it my signature look. But it's a happy medium that you could find. It's a win-win if you can make outsourcing work.
Sure, I think that's a key to being able to scale up your business, if people are being able to do that, because there's only so many hours in a day that you can shoot and process. And if you're looking to get to the next level and scale up, that's what you have to do.
Yeah, I wish I could clone myself. You know, my dad's always asking me, when are you gonna hire help?
Me too, Sam.
Yeah. It's like everyone's like, when are you going to hire more people? I'm like, no, it's too much to train. It, you know, they're just going to leave me once they have the Jedi power and then backstab me, you know, kind of like Kylo Ren. He's going to kill me when I'm sleeping or something. But and the last thing I'll say is, I always say this to newbies. Photography is 49% at most. and it's 51% business in the least. You know, it's just another way of saying it's more business than photography if you're trying to run a business. So what does that mean? Well, beef yourself up and educate yourself with business savvy. I recently went on a shopping spree during Black Friday and Christmas, and I just went nuts. I bought a bunch of classes from Creative Live. I have no affiliation. I don't make a cent, but I'm totally plugging Creative Live. They have really good classes about how to maximize your profit, how to market social media, how to leverage that. And I've learned so much just from sitting there, you know, while everyone's watching TV and Game of Thrones and, you know, Walking Dead or whatever. I'm sitting there slaving in front of Creative Live tutorials. And guess what? It's so much fun. I love learning. And I would highly recommend teaching yourself business savvy and know-how and how to market, how to invest, how to maximize profitability. It's all out there, you know, and they're cheap. Classes are less than $100.
And be friends with people that are successful at business also, because that helps.
Yeah, I tell people it's really hard when people ask me about business and what should I charge and what do I do, do this, do that. It's always hard for me because it's all different for everywhere. You know, Brian, you're in Manhattan, New York. You know, I mean, that's crazy trying to work there. And Sam, you're doing these huge, gosh darn, I don't want to talk about it places. I don't even know if I want to do those houses. They're so big. But man, I dig, dig your pictures. And, you know, I think that we're just, it's different everywhere. So, you know, it's whatever works for you and what worked for me. I don't think it would work for anybody else. So I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I think the key is to remember, like anything else in life, one size does not fit all. So it's funny when you sit back and listen to threads and people get all very, very defensive and religious about their solution. Well, you know, you have to remember that every market's different, every location's different. What's important is to look for those intersections. You know, what is common among all of these locations and markets, and then try to learn from that and adapt it to your particular market.
Sam, as we wrap up, do you want to tell people how they can find you and see some of your work, your social media handles, and all that?
I want to go see it.
Yeah. Once again, it's aloha-photovideo.com. And my website is old and moldy. So it's a good starting point.
Oldandmoldy.com.
There's not much there. Yeah, oldandmoldy.com. It's neglected. And the reason why I neglect it is I don't get business from there. My business is 99% word of mouth. I'm kind of spread around like, you know, I don't know, like crack. But
you,
but,
Sam what, Chen, to see my latest doing crack.
Yeah. Well, I like that analogy because I like them to like be chemically dependent on me. Like when I went on a vacation in April of last year, they were panicking. They're like, oh, you know, they go into withdrawals and they're like, what do we do? And I like that, you know? So to see my latest work, go to instagram.com/aloha.photovideo.
I've seen it. Great stuff.
All right, cool. And I know you're also very active in a lot of the real estate Facebook groups. So people can also find you there and see some of your work there or chat with you there. We thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. It was fun.
Great. And at such short notice, appreciate it. And we'll all be looking for your future stuff, your DIY stuff and your things you put out. Big thumbs up. Okay. I think we're going to call it a wrap there, Mr. Brian.
Yeah, but I'm just going to remind everybody to leave a review for our show.
Yeah.
And like us and spread the word.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find us at Shooting Spaces across Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that. You can reach us if you need to at info@shootingspacespodcast.com.
And what's the new feature? What is it? Ask those two guys or something?
Yeah, ask the guys a new feature. Don't forget to record a question you have for us, send it over, and we'll take a listen, and if we deem it worthy, we'll make it a topic of a discussion for one of our episodes.
Deem it worthy. Whoa, that's pretty serious stuff.
Yeah, hey.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you all.
Until next time.
Until next time.
This has been Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Subscribe to the show and don't forget to leave us a review. You can also follow Rich and Brian on social media and at their website, shootingspacespodcast.com.